Before she was famous around the world for her books, including the Bronze Horseman series, Paulina Simons was world famous in New Zealand. Her bestsellers found an audience here before the world discovered them. End of Forever is a new trilogy of novels that borrows a page from the Netflix playbook. All three books come out in just a year, allowing for binge reading, but like binge watching. The Tiger Catcher and A Beggar's Kingdom are out now, and Inexpressible Island is out in November, and Paulina Simons is touring New Zealand to talk about them. She joins us now. Hi.
Hi, Jesse.
What a pleasure. Nice to have you here.
Yeah, it's very great to be here.
Yeah, well, you've been to New Zealand many times. You've talked to readers here. Why do you think New Zealanders connected with your books even before the UK and the US did?
I think it's because they are very avid readers, and for them, reading maybe is a way to travel to other places.
Oh, yeah.
So they also, I know, like to travel, but reading allows them to make their journeys from the comfort of their own home. And I think that maybe in my books they find some adventure, not just physical adventure, but also emotional adventure, the adventures of, you know, souls looking for their place in the world. And I think that they just responded really strongly to that, I'm hoping.
You had a high-profile fan here as well. That might have helped.
Yeah, that really helped, I have to say. He was like the Oprah of New Zealand.
We're talking about Paul Holmes. Did you remain friends with him over the years?
I did. We remained really good friends up until his death. He came to New York with his son. We went out to eat. He came to my house. I made him blinchiki. I made him Russian food. Yeah, he was a good friend. He was a good man.
I'm trying to remember what he said about your books. He said he was expecting it to be just chick lit, but then there was so much more in there, so much historical stuff. And
he really embraced the Bronze Horseman in a way that I found just astonishing. And that really helped clearly to raise my profile here too, because so many people listened to him. He had such a powerful voice. I mean, you know, if Paul Holmes liked it, that's what I said, he was like the Oprah of New Zealand. If Paul Holmes liked it, then there must be something to it.
I've written 20 years ago now, that Bronze Horseman series, this love story between Titania and Alexander. Was it hard to break free from that epic love story?
Well, yeah, because I kept coming back to it. Every time I thought I was out, they pulled me back in. I wrote, I laughingly call it the trilogy in seven books. Because when I first became a writer, they told me there'd be no mass. So we had three books, and then I wrote two prequels, and I wrote a cookbook, and I wrote a memoir. And then I wrote an in-universe book that is not part of it, but it's an in-universe book, too.
You strike me as someone who sometimes lets the characters make the decision. You create the characters, and then you sort of follow them.
But, you know, I almost don't – yeah, the characters are almost already there, and I just sort of chip away at them until their true selves are revealed to me. So, yes, sometimes, unfortunately, the characters don't quite do what I want them to.
Mm. Sorry, I had a typo there in my notes. Of course, it's Alexander and Tatiana. And then this new trilogy, End of Forever – has all three books out in a year. How unusual is that in the publishing world?
Well, it is unusual, but it's only one of the reasons that was possible is because I wrote them all. So it took me 5 years to write them. But once we had them, we thought it would be almost cruel to make my poor readers wait so long. It's been 4 years without my books, you know, in the marketplace. So, and so we thought that they would enjoy that also because the way we absorb and embrace our entertainment has changed. We now like it now, and we want it now, and we want it all at the same time. So this does sort of kind of channel that.
Has the feedback been good on that decision?
The feedback has been great on that decision, and most people are so excited. I know here in New Zealand, the book is just out, and so people haven't had a chance to read A Beggar's Kingdom. But in Australia, where I just was, some people have already read it, and I know that my feedback has been just what I wanted, which is I cannot believe I even have to wait 2 months for the next book, which is, you know, quite gratifying for me, I guess.
And this whole story came to you all at once.
I know. That was unprecedented too. That was unique in my experience in all the, 26 years that I've been writing. That has never happened to me before. Which is one of the reasons why, despite how difficult it was, I continued to believe in the story, because I had it. I had it all. I knew that to tell this story required these three books. And so I couldn't compromise on that, because it wouldn't be this story. And I really had to believe in it, even though many times it was a true struggle to finish them, to write them, to work on them, to revise them, to figure out what was best for the books, also for my publishing career, because it's been so long between books. So
you were watching a movie. Yeah. And you clearly weren't focusing very much on the movie.
Okay, so here's what I want to say. So the whole story came to me in this heady two-hour period where I was supposed to be watching a movie, but suddenly I got this glimpse of Julian, my hero, and his desperate struggle to find and save Josephine, the woman that he loves, and all the desperation, all his hope, all his outrage came to me all at once. The story didn't begin as an acorn. It began as an oak. It was, the whole thing was already there. I mean, that when you read Inexpressible Island, you see that's just incredible that I saw it all like this. And so what I tell my readers is that if they're ever looking for inspiration for their own projects, I highly recommend How to Train Your Dragon 2.
Great. Oh, if only it was that easy. Did you feel like you were almost channeling something when that story was coming in?
Well, I didn't understand what was happening to me. Yeah, it was so remarkable, because I don't know if any of you watch Game of Thrones, but it's like you were flying in that opening sequence where the dragon is flying over Westeros. Mm. It's like I blinked and I would see another part of the story. I blinked and I would see another part of the story.
And did you write it all down, or was it stuck in your head?
Forever stuck in my head. And then I wouldn't stop speaking about it to everybody who knew. I talked to my husband about it. I talked to my daughters about it, my sister, everybody. I said, wait till you hear the story that I have from the beginning, even before I wrote a single word down. So
what's going on in that brain of yours?
But it was only the one time it happened. Yeah. It never happened like that before.
What did you eat for breakfast that day?
No, I have to say, what exactly? Well, I have to recreate everything that happened that day. But that day was unremarkable, except for the fact that I sat down in the movie theater and this happened.
And so the books, are they close to that original story?
Well, the bones of it is exactly the original story, yeah. I mean, clearly the details, it's like you don't know the three-dimensional details of everything, right? You only know...
Yeah.
But you definitely know the structure. You know the shape of it. You know the trunk and the branches, and the leaves are all, new. And it also became much more complicated. Clearly, there was a lot more complex stuff going on. There's a lot about friendship. Julian has an incredible friendship with someone that, so I write about the friendship between men like I've never written before. That was sort of new. And his relationship generally to his own life is something that I had to discover as I was writing them.
Can you tell people what the book is about, bit of it?
Well, sure. So boy meets girl, boy and girl fall madly in love, but then boy loses girl, and boy turns the world upside down to find the girl again. And he gets a second chance in this magical realism, amazing way, and he cannot believe that he does have the second chance, but he doesn't quite know what to do. He doesn't know how to get it right. He only has a chance. He doesn't have a roadmap. So the books are them trying, Josephine and Julian trying to come together and stay together and try to find a way to make their life so that they could be with each other. And they just keep trying and failing. And so that effort, that love, the outrage and all the sort of the bloodshed and the murder and betrayal that comes with it is part of their journey. So it's an adventure story because there are two of them. But it's also a story of this one man's, superhuman perseverance and devotion to another human being and all the sacrifices that he makes along the way to, to be with her.
I'm speaking with author Paulina Simons. She has a trilogy out this year, The Tiger Catcher and Beggar's Kingdom. They're out now. And Inexpressible Island comes out in November. And we won't give away too much, although I did want to let people know the books have an element of science fiction, time travel, which is quite a new idea for you.
Yeah.
Why go there?
Well, because I...
You didn't have a choice.
I didn't go there. It came to me. This is what I saw. And what I saw was him going through different historical epochs to find her. And so I didn't know how this was going to be. Believe me, I struggled with it the way Julian struggles with it, because I knew that it was new for me, for my readers. But what I tried to do was not to make it an I Dream of Jeannie type of magical realism, but more like the magical realism of a skeptic who comes to his belief by hard-won struggle. And we come to it also by hard-won struggle ourselves as we journey with him. So I wanted him to travel to his faith and to believe that this was possible for him. I didn't want him to just blink and already be on the other side.
Given that this is a bit of a departure for you, can you tell me what makes a Paulina Simons book a Paulina Simons book?
Oh, that's a good question. I think probably the thing that makes it, and this certainly is, these books have at the end of Forever Books, and all my books have it, is a certain emotional dimension. Because I guess when I write, the interesting thing for me is always the journey of the character, the search for meaning, and that comes from the soul. And so So that struggle, the suffering, the anguish, the pain of being alive is what I like to write about. And I think in all my characters, that's the thing that I myself am drawn to when I write it, so that I can weep with my characters and love with them and grieve with them. And I think that that's probably what they respond to most of all, and that everything else, the narrative, the story, is sort of the secondary part.
Julian is in love with Josephine. But did you intentionally make her a bit hard for the rest of us to like?
Well, let me ask you a question. So if you're a man and you meet a woman and she's glorious and gorgeous and friendly and smiley and open, right? She's flirty with you. She's charming. She puts nothing on but her face, but her best face forward to you. And when you fall in love with her, she falls in love with you back. This is what you get, right? So tell me, what part of that as a man you find hard to like? Go ahead. I really want to know, Jesse.
But if we know a little bit more about
her... But we don't know anything. She's a mystery to us, as she is to him and to the reader. We know nothing. Now, we have some reservations, but we have no reason to doubt that this is real.
But I've seen readers describe her as selfish and manipulative and a liar.
Well, yes. By the time they get to the part where they realize that she's kept secrets from him, but that's not for, he doesn't know that.
No.
He falls in love with what he thinks is the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that sometimes she is judged a bit harshly because, sure, she did keep secrets. But, I mean, who has not lived in that glass house, frankly? I don't know. I wouldn't want anybody to throw stones at me. I once couldn't tell a guy that I had been going out with for 2 years that I was marrying someone else because I didn't want to hurt him. I didn't want to tell him that.
I wonder if he's written that book.
I hope not. I would not come out very good in that book, I'll tell you.
Where did the title come from? Why call the first book Tiger Catcher?
Oh, the Tiger Catcher comes from inside of the book that Julian meets a man who used to be who came from a generation of tiger catchers. This is a real thing in Southeast Asia. And they're not tiger killers, they're tiger catchers. And to catch a tiger, you have to be smart, because a tiger is the most ferocious animal in our kingdom, you know. And so to catch a ferocious animal, you have to be ferocious yourself in a different way. You have to mirror the tiger in order to be able to catch him. And it's sort of a metaphor for what Julian is in the book. So he is the tiger catcher.
And it takes place in Los Angeles and London. I wonder if location is almost as important to character for you.
Absolutely. And it is singularly important. I chose those locations for a reason. As we know, L.A., I chose L.A. because L.A. is the city of dreams. Mm. L.A. is the city in which the currency of the realm is fairy tale. And I chose London because London is the city that built Western civilization.
How does being an immigrant born in the former Soviet Union and raised mostly in America, how does that change your sense of place in the world?
Quite strongly. I actually, when I was thinking about it, I thought it's quite interesting when you think about my books as a whole, as a body of work, mm-hmm. how many of them deal with the sense of a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's court. In other words, a man who's slightly out of place and out of time, trying to find his way in the new world. And that's basically my story, isn't it? That I had one identity, and I had to give that identity up, and my parents too, and, you know, come to a new world and find a new identity, find a new self. And then I came to England and had to find myself one more time. And then when I went to Texas, I had to find myself, all over again. So I think that my books absolutely deal a lot with that, of a man. Even the Bronze Horseman books, Alexander does not belong in the Soviet Union, and yet he's there. Tali feels she does not belong in Topeka, Kansas, yet she's there. And it's all about the characters trying to find their place in the world.
You said that you feel in Russian and you think in English. How does that come together in your writing?
Oh, because the writing tends to be long-suffering and melancholy, just like a Russian. It's like when you read my writing, people must be thinking that I must drink a lot of vodka when I write. Though I do not.
Okay. Fate is a real theme.
Yes.
In the End of Forever trilogy. Do you believe in fate?
Yes. Well, I believe in the interaction between fate and free will. Isn't that the crux of all human existence, right? Mm. So fate plays a very strong component, but also you realize that without you doing something, fate will have no part almost in your life. You still have to place yourself where you need to be. It's almost like I had to write Tully first, and that was my free will. But then fate placed Tully right in the way of a person who was looking for a launch book for his new imprint at his new publishing company. And so Tully was bought by him and became his launch title. Mm. So there was an element of fate, but there was also an element of my own effort on my behalf of my books.
Your book about going back to Russia with your father, 6 days in Leningrad, that wasn't e-book, is now in print actually here in New Zealand. I wonder if that felt a bit like time travel for you.
Oh, it did. It did, absolutely, tremendously. It was, it's actually a good metaphor for what happened, because there are 25 years passed between the time I left Russia and my dad and I returned. And I was changed, and my world was changed, and my life was changed, and yet we came back and found everything almost as we had left it. So that was quite eye-opening.
And in that book you wrote, "Who said memory is kind? Memory is merciless. All the things you wanted to remember about your childhood there, your father wanted to forget."
Yeah.
Is memory part of what drives Julian in the new book?
Yes. Memory is everything. Memory is actually, interestingly, thematically, in the end, turns out to be one of the fundamental subjects of the entire trilogy. What does it mean to remember that you loved someone? What does it mean to love someone? What is the difference between the two? Is there a difference between the two? And what happens what happens when people that you love leave you. Is memory alone enough, you know?
Your family has known heartache and loss. Does it make you a better writer to have lived through loss?
Doesn't make me a better anything to have lived through loss. Everything in my entire life is worse because of the losses sort of you suffered. I cannot think of a single thing in my life that is better sort of having lived through my own, you know, personal grief, I guess, for the people that I've loved who are not with me anymore.
You are here in New Zealand talking to fans, and let's just save some time for everyone. I'll ask the question so no one else needs to. Is there going to be another book in the Bronze Horseman series?
Maybe.
I thought you were going to give me a flat out no.
No, because there may be.
Okay. And speaking of New Zealand, this country actually appears in one of your books.
Yeah, I've always wanted to go to Invercargill, and my publishers refused to let me. And since 2007, I kept saying, please, somebody take
really?
Me there. And they kept saying, no. And I kept saying, please. And they kept saying, I said, you know what? I'm going to write about it, and I'm just going to make it up. How are you going to feel then? And they said, do what you want. And so I did. And so I...
So the second book.
In the
current trilogy.
In the current trilogy, in Beggar's Kingdom, there's a very large climactic, let's just say, South Island component.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's almost like an Edgar Allan Poe horror story. But it's tremendous. It was incredibly fun and emotional and fantastic to write.
Why were you compelled to go to Invercargill?
I wasn't compelled. Maybe Julian was compelled. But I wanted to go to Invercargill because it completely fired up my imagination, because I thought it was I didn't know what the town was going to be like, but the town that I thought you could see Antarctica from Invercargill.
Yeah.
I had this idea that you could stand
on
that.
You wanted to go south, far,
I wanted
far
to go
south.
Yes. Mm. And I thought that maybe if you looked far in the horizon, you could see you know, Antarctica. And then somebody told me that it was like 2,000 miles away. Mm. I said, okay, well, so maybe not in the horizon. But that's why it's a place like a girl from Russia just could never imagine herself being. And it was just, I don't know, strangely romantic, I guess.
You know what Mick Jagger said about Invercargill when he visited there?
Oh, no.
I'm not going to tell you.
Oh, no.
You'll have to Google it.
Oh, did. Was it something awful?
Paulina Simons, great to have you in New Zealand. She is not going to Invercargill this time either, but she's going to Auckland, Wellington, Palmerston North, Christchurch and Dunedin, talking about her new series of books, End of Forever. Lovely to have you in. Thanks.